You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 31st of January, 2015, on Monocle 24.
Packing punchy headlines on the front page, shifting banners and wandering logos, tricky typesets and lucid layouts in Berliner tabloid, or even smaller formats. The newspaper, a choice selection of the best editorial to be rifled through, folded and crumpled. A dying format to some, the bastion of proper journalism to others. The world of the printed newspaper for you today. On The Stack. From The Telegraph, a British broadsheet that is no shrinking violet, to the NZZ am Sonntag, a paper with a reputation to maintain. The presses might have slowed, but the quality of print has not diminished. Editors, typographers, designers, and publishers are keener than ever to make those pages sell. We'll be getting our thumbs dirty and getting some very qualified newspaper insights. Plus, we'll head to Lisbon, where one respected national editor is still passionate about print.
The print edition has to answer to this change. So what we have done is, in the print edition, give less, but more in depth and more with more work.
All that and plenty more besides on this printed newspaper edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. Now to kick off our look at newspapers across Europe and far beyond, let's introduce our guests. As Associate Editor of the Telegraph World Edition, Terry Ramsey has acquired an eye for what makes for a good front page. And to guide us through the design process, we also have Simon Esterson, influential art director, who has The Guardian, The New Statesman, NZZ am Sonntag under his belt, amongst many others. Terry Ramsey and Simon Esterson, welcome. Terry, I want to start with you. Of course, Simon's been in, I'm not sure if it was this seat or was the other seat before, but tell us a little bit, for those, of course, everyone knows the Daily Telegraph, but the World Edition, this would be probably the tabloid that you would see on international newsstands when you're away from this island. I guess, you know, slightly geared at an expat audience on one side, as much as just people who want a Telegraph worldview.
We have a lot of subscribers who get the paper on a regular basis because it keeps them in touch with the UK. So we try to give them a package which is sort of news from home and done in a sort of British style.
Mm. And that becomes, I guess, there's a digest desk that pulls that together, or what is the editing process for?
Yeah, there's a small team of us and we have access to all the stories that appear in the Telegraph and all the wires that come in, and we pull things together like that. So some stories, which may be one-off stories, run more or less as they would appear in the Telegraph, maybe a slightly truncated version. Other stories, like running stories, which are going all week, or even longer, we pull together, because in the daily paper, they're done on a day-to-day bang, bang, bang version. Mm. What we want is an overview so that our readers can see the whole thing with a sort of back-looking perspective.
Mm. Now, of course, this program is very much devoted to paper. There's plenty of paper around us, but I do have to ask the question, does it, I guess, creep up in maybe not editorial meetings, but business meetings, that someone is saying that, yes, you have lots of readers in Malta, but they've all got tablets, so why are we still committing to a print bill every month?
Because I think we give them a different offering. Mm. Because, yes, there is a tabloid and they can look at the daily paper, but this gives them a weekly overview. And maybe if you're living abroad, you want to keep in touch with the UK, but you don't want to read a whole UK newspaper every day. So this is a way of keeping in touch, but without devoting all your time to it.
Mm. Simon Esterson is also here. And just, of course, we were saying in the intro, you've spent some time at NZZ am Sonntag. Now they're actually in the mothership building. They used to be down the street in sort of a cozy sort of actually modernist Swiss building. Now they've moved into the HQ. I can remember a discussion, though, as well, and like so many newspaper companies, where they were talking about at a point that maybe they should also just stop with the logistical nightmare of sending these newspapers on trains. And of course, this being Switzerland, that they were thinking about just giving everyone an iPad, because you could do, especially with the way the Swiss franc is, they could definitely do that now, which is quite something. Tell us a little bit about working for a newspaper like the NZZ. Many people will see this on newsstands around the world, but a very peculiar, very interesting culture there.
The daily paper is extremely austere. And I think when we first started working with them, maybe 12, 13 years ago, there wasn't always even a picture on the front page.
No.
And so...
There was no colour, I guess, when you started, was there?
No, no. The colour was there, but they just decided not to use it. There'd be meetings about, should we keep all the pictures in black and white because somehow that was more real or something. It's an amazing institution, and that building you talk about, when we first went there, the printing machines had moved out of the basement, but there was still a sort of turn-of-the-century room where the editorial meetings were held. It was like more like being in a Viennese coffee house or a Swiss coffee house than it was an editorial meeting. And now those structures exist, but as you say, everybody's got iPads and whizzy terminals and things.
Yeah, which all sounds rather delightful. I was talking to some friends there, and they were asking about just, you know, basic editorial questions about how, you know, how you do things. And maybe the Telegraph is maybe a little bit like this as well. So I mean, you've worked, of course, on the Sunday edition. And that was, I guess that came along about, what, 12 years ago now, a decade?
About that. And it's a different beast. And the brief was to make something with a kind of wider audience than the Daily. And that process of how different it was going to be was quite a delicate one at the time. We had colour pictures and things like that.
Well, also an incredibly particular beast of a paper as well, because this journalist I know there said, how did you get that kind of story? What type of journalist would you commission to get that type of piece, whether it's in Monocle or the FT? And I said, well, surely... Yeah, I see lots of bylines in the Daily NZZ in Tokyo, and I know that you've also got your own correspondence. And it was amazing. They said, we could never ask anyone from the Daily to do anything for us on the Sunday paper. And they said they wouldn't want to.
Yeah.
And they said even we couldn't even commission our Tokyo correspondent on the Sunday paper to do anything other than politics, which was...
yeah, and there's a cultural void between the two papers. The two separate offices kind of symbolize that. And when they moved together... a few months ago, it was an emotional moment, I think, for everybody.
Absolutely.
Isn't it interesting that they deliberately had a gulf between the two papers, between the Weekly and the Sunday? Because in this country and many other countries, the move is the opposite direction. The Daily papers and Sunday papers are becoming closer and closer. Staffs have become unified and papers have become more similar.
I mean, but it was like that once upon a time, though, at the Telegraph as well. There were separate New York correspondent, separate Washington correspondent. I mean, it may not have been that beat, but it's all a unified newsroom largely now.
Absolutely.
But Sunday Times in London, I guess Sunday Times is maybe the last place that it might be like that.
Do the Sunday Times and the Times like each other? There always seemed to be that thing that actually when you had a daily paper and a Sunday paper in the same building, they really didn't get on very well. I remember once when I worked at The Guardian, you'd go upstairs to The Observer and they'd be laying out, this would be Friday night, and they'd be laying out a story for Sunday's paper, and you'd walk downstairs to The Guardian and they were laying out the same story, but for Saturday's paper. And I think that kind of symbolises the problem of having, you know, how can you integrate these two things? How far can you keep them separate? You know, managers want to integrate them, don't they?
We're going to very much be sort of looking at not just front pages, but grids and other things. Do you think it would have been an impossible task, Simon, to actually bring in, whether they would have been a Swiss designer or German, but you almost had to come from well off of the continent to jump into doing a paper like NZZ, that it was probably easier bringing a Brit in than certainly if you brought in someone Swiss?
Yeah, we probably just didn't come with that baggage of having seen the NZZ around for years on our breakfast table. I should say that I did the NZZ on Sunday with Mark Porter, who we worked together at The Guardian as well. So we've sort of acted as a newspaper duo in various places.
So it was amazing that you came to market, as we said, you know, a little over, I guess, you know, a decade plus ago. With something which had, you know, color, it had a very, you know, very different personality. What did you want to bring to the market? Because also, yes, Switzerland is a small market on one side, but you would say that also that the NZZ market, that person is also Monday to Friday or maybe Monday to Saturday. They're also maybe reading the Frankfurter Allgemeine, maybe they're reading the Süddeutsche, they're potentially, you know, picking up something like Die Zeit as well. What did you try to bring? And what was, you know, when you look at sort of the design value, it continues to be multi-section. What were you trying to achieve?
I think we did want to make a paper that was different from the Daily NZZ. In a way, the clarity of the Daily made it quite clear. If you want to make a different Sunday, these are the kind of things you might try and do. And photography, a lot more feature writing, and a different, you know, an editor with a desire to make a different paper. And I think, you know, the discussion about newspapers now is kind of I think the situation for dailies is different from the situation for weekend papers.
I've got this week's edition of Die Zeit here, and it's amazing to see that here is a newspaper which is in growth mode still. Incredible to look at the results. They've only sort of now started to do metropolitan editions. So, okay, they came out on Thursday, but I guess you would argue that they are positioned as a newspaper for the weekend. I'm wondering, Terry, do you think we might see a first mover in this country? Maybe someone in the UK will say, look at this is what we need to do. We are going to look at digital for the entire week. But what we're going to do is just focus on putting out a big, chunky weekend package, because that's when people have time to consume. Or are we there yet? Are we still 5 years out or something?
I think we're way off that at the moment. I think it's probably something that will happen, and it's something that readers might enjoy. But just at the moment, I don't think many of our dailies would give up the daily revenue for a start. That comes with advertising and sales. The only paper I can think of possibly that might be tempted to do that would be The Independent.
Potentially. What do you reckon? Still a ways away? Or are there enough, I don't know, smart or foolish people sitting around boardroom tables to think, let's give it a go?
I think it will happen. And we switch off print Monday to Friday, print at the weekend, and it's a combination of whether somebody's either brave enough to do it, or they're like The Independent has been in under other circumstances, they're kind of forced to do something. So, the whole move from broadsheet to tabloid or Berliner was really set off by The Independent doing its two versions. I get the sense that the Indie was both brave and desperate and would try something. Newspapers are incredibly traditional things.
I hadn't noticed. You're listening to The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay. Also, our guests today are Terry Ramsey and Simon Esterson. We're going to go away for a very short break. We'll be heading to Lisbon to meet the editor of 2014's European Newspaper of the Year. Stay with us.
Every Sunday, the Bulletin with UBS goes behind the numbers and the hype to explain what's really happening in the world of finance. Brought to you from the desks of the key analysts at UBS and experts from around the world, the programme delivers definitive insights into the people, places and products set to shape the week ahead. This is the show that explains how a fast-moving financial world really works. Set your agenda for the week ahead. Tune in to The Bulletin with UBS every Sunday at 1800 hours Tokyo time, 1600 hours London time, 11 a.m. in New York. Anytime after that, you can download from monocle.com and via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.
And you're back with The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay, here on Monocle 24. At the end of 2014, the Office for Newspaper Design, a German organization, gave Portuguese title Público the European Newspaper of the Year award. The jury stressed the absolutely unmistakable design of the newspaper, which walked hand in hand with Público.pt, the newspaper's website. However, according to a recent interview with its owners, Público could be forced to close its doors this year. To find out more for us, Antonio Fernandez paid a visit to Publico's offices to meet the editor, Barbara Reis.
Esta capa foi escolhida pela Time Magazine e por uma série sites, de jornais e revistas como uma das minhas capas.
That was Barbara Reis, editor of Publico, guiding me through some of the newspaper's most famous covers, like the Mandela one, after the leader passed away in 2013. That cover, Barbara tells me, was even distinguished by Time magazine as one of the best covers at the time of Mandela's death. In 2014, Público was considered the European Newspaper of the Year by the Office of Newspaper Design.
I was just so proud and so happy when we heard the news. Essentially, it's a collective prize, and I say this not to be polite or nice. It really is. If you look at the works mentioned, you see that so many people worked in each of them, from so different desks and areas and departments of the newspaper.
Público decided to redevelop their editorial process. Before that, in 2007, Público called renowned newspaper designer Mark Porter to renew their image. Their logo became more powerful, the size more friendly, and the design clean and attractive.
The print edition has to answer to this change, so you cannot just have the paper exactly as you had it 25 years ago. So what we have done is to take out the trinkets, the small stuff, even some medium stuff from the print edition, and everything is online, so that we can, in the print edition, give less to the reader, but more in depth and more with more work. But what we are saying is that if you want to buy the print edition, you want a selection. You don't want to see everything, because probably you've seen all many headlines before. So you want to learn something in depth. You want to read a long interview. You want to read a long reportage. You want to open your mind and to have some time to think.
When it started, in 1990,
we believe that Publico will last for many, many, many years. We don't know what will happen in the future. No one does. We don't have a crystal ball. But I would say that even when, if it's true that all the print newspapers will be gone over the next few years, one guru said the last newspaper in the Western world would disappear in 2041, right? So I don't know whether that's true or not. What I know is that Publico is here to stay. It's just too important to disappear.
In a couple of months, Publico will be 25 and will surely continue to be an active voice in Portuguese society for many more years. For Monocle in Lisbon, I'm António Fernandes.
And he was talking to the editor of Publico newspaper, Barbara Reis. I'm just wondering, and I want to just pick up on a quote, Terry. Do you like the notion of no trinkets in the paper anymore? Which seems kind of interesting, because a lot of people also think that you need more trinkets in a newspaper.
Yes, I mean, it seems a rather austere line to take, because in the UK in particular, we like our papers to be full of trinkets, and our most successful papers are jammed full of trinkets. Publico is a beautiful looking paper, I've got to say. I mean, you look through it and you think, wow, this is wonderful. But as you flick through it, it's evident what one of its problems is. There's barely an advert to be seen there. I mean, every page is open and clean and wonderfully designed, because it's not tripped up by any monetary considerations like advertising.
I wonder if that's also part of the judging process as well. It's always very easy to judge something editorially pure. So do you think that when the German organization gave out the award, they purely, and is it fair to sort of just purely look at design, Simon? Because one has to sort of take the advertising if you're going to, of course, make a proper go of it, unless, of course, you've got very, very, very deep pocketed owners.
Yes, I mean, undoubtedly, beautiful spreads with no ads on look great. But then sometimes people, you know, weigh newspapers, and this is, Publico's great, but it's not that thick. Whereas, you know, Desite is fairly healthy, and NZZ on Sunday here with its sort of eight sections is actually struggling to get the ads in, and it's on the maximum pagination it can possibly be on the printing machines. So I think you can have good design, you know, and advertising too.
This, of course, is a paper which your former sparring partner was responsible for the current design. Do you think that No Trinkets was partly him, or do you think that was Barbara not wanting trinkets on the page?
Well, actually, I worked on it too. We worked on it together, and we're completely like the No Trinkets idea. I mean, what it enabled us to do was to have very strong feature spreads, which I think is what Barbara's talking about when she says, you know, covering things in depth. And that's what makes it look and feel different as a newspaper. I think the problem with trinkets these days is that trinkets don't only exist in print. Trinkets exist on your phone and and your tablet. And it's this continual trying to define what works on what platform. And of course, there's a point where those of us who love printed things part company with editors, because, you know, newspapers don't have the newspaper's institution doesn't actually, a lot of it doesn't have a loyalty to this noisy bit of wonderful paper, does it? It has a loyalty to communication, and that can be, that's your telephone, that's your tablet, all those things.
Tell me, just that process of working, was it Barbara and also a strong publisher, and then you know, a considerable art desk, or was it really just a triumvirate pulling this together?
It was Barbara and Sonia Matos, who's the art director. And, you know, one of the great things about a newspaper, about Publico, is it's a small team. And I think we all know that kind of small teams are, they might not have the resources of big teams, but they don't have to do the meetings, and they can be agile, and they can actually do that thing of you just sit at a table and you talk about something and make a decision and get on with it. And that's still a really good management technique, I think.
I guess, you know, setting this up, Terry, it sounds like that's a little bit like your franchise. I mean, that you have a bit of a boutique operation within a larger department store.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we do. And we actually try to take the best bits. And we're saying to people, you don't need to read everything. These are the bits you need to read, which sounds to me like what they're trying to do with Pubblico and saying that we're going to put everything online, but give you just pluck the best bits out and put them in print.
I mean, you've done a bit of homework here. You've prepared a series of sections. And I wanted to ask you, in that sort of, how is the selling game? And I guess, you know, we're not just talking about the art of the front page, but also the crafting of headlines. You know, when you've got, obviously, the chatter and noise that comes from a digital device, which is always, you know, tugging at your pocket on one side. What role does the cover play? Certainly when we just move beyond pure typography, but how we arrange that type as well.
I think the cover's still very important, if not more important these days, because in quite a lot of instances, people will know the front page news before they come to get the paper. So what you're selling with your front page design and your front page headline is a sort of brand, really, your take on the news. It's not going to be new information for a lot of your readers. So they want something that they can identify with and maybe reflects their own personality or their own vision of the news. I've got some pages here which came in the wake of the Charlie Hebdo attack, because that was a classic story where everybody, more or less, you know, unless you're a hermit, knew that story by the time you came to pick up your paper the next day.
I mean, here you're showing, of course, what the Telegraph did, very bold and headline, which I think we probably saw echoed in other parts of the English-speaking world as well, if not other languages, but you know, fully sort of, you know, bold, all caps, war on freedom, and with that shot of the gunman, you know, out on the street below those offices.
Yeah. The War on Freedom headline is a label. It's not an actual news headline, is it? It's not saying to you, people were shot yesterday in Paris, because it assumes that you already know that.
We look at sort of two of the tabloids, the Sun with just Non on the cover, 12 die in Paris mag shooting, and then the Daily Mirror with, barbaric, same image, slightly different crop that they've used with a terror bloodbath.
And both went with the image of the policeman who was about to be shot, and some newspapers, the Telegraph included, decided not to run with that image. I think maybe they thought it was just a little bit too brutal for them.
Now, I wasn't in the UK when this happened, and I'm just seeing the Independent cover for the first time, with a yellow hand, a bony finger, giving sort of the F off sign coming out of the pages of Charlie Hebdo. Is that exactly how it ran, or was this a special edition in under a traditional cover underneath?
No, I think this is
that was how it ran.
And,
yeah,
and I think it's fantastic that it decided to do that. You know, nobody else, none of the English papers attempted that, and I don't know. On a good day, you'd maybe wonder why The Guardian didn't ask Steve Bell to do something on the front cover. We haven't got a Guardian front page.
No, we don't. But it was quite traditional. It was a picture headline front page. As we move through these, you'll see that we move from the traditional British sort of front page, which has the picture and the headline, to much more artistic, much more continental ones, some of which have very little type at all, or they are pure design.
Just before we go, and we sort of cracked this show today, you just mentioned continental and the continental style of cover, and I to both of you, before we wrap up, do you think that, you know, whether it's graphic or whether it's an economy of words, you know, whatever it may be, does that start to have, you know, more value? And I'm actually wondering why we don't see more of it in the Anglo-Saxon world, because, you know, you don't see it on Aussie papers, you don't see it in the US or Canada, and you certainly don't see it so much here, aside from, of course, the Independent cover that we're referencing. But I'm, you know, in a world where we are more visual, and of course, you know, digital plays an increasingly large role, do you think that maybe if you're an art desk at a British or American paper, maybe that's a direction to look at?
I think it could be, because some of these continental front pages are very striking. The Politiken one, which is largely white with a broken pencil right in the middle of a huge white space, is very striking. But I don't think many of the mainstream British papers are bold enough to do that at the moment. I can't imagine say, at the Telegraph or the Mail or the Sun, somebody saying, let's do a page like that. Not at the moment, because the tradition is big headlines, big pictures.
That's the great weakness. The English tabloid red top tradition is not a graphic design tradition. It's a kind of sub-editors carving it out live kind of tradition, and about news and urgency and not about graphic design. And I think it's a very strange thing. We live in a world where everything's designed, but not the red top newspapers, not the Mail, not the Sun. Sorry, it's unfair to call the Mail a red top. Not the Mail, not the Sun, not the Mirror. And actually, I think it would be very interesting to see if you could reinvent those as a designed editorial object.
Probably a topic for another program, and maybe one which is more video than just discussing it in good old audio form. We're going to have to leave it there, Terry Ramsey and Simon Esterson. And that brings us to the end of this 127th edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Blair. Producer today was David Pleasant, and our studio manager was Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back at the same time next Saturday, and of course you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, for me, goodbye.